Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hey, hi guys, and how are things going today? And welcome to the show. Today, super excited to have David on the call. David's the CEO of Bicmo, and super excited because David's had a fascinating career, fascinating life. He's worked as a mechanical engineer, a nuclear engineer, and has also started a gardening business and sold their gardening business to travel the world. So super excited, obviously, to dive into some of his stories today. So welcome, David. Awesome to have you on the show.
No, thanks for having me. I look forward to speaking.
Awesome. So let's dive into it and let's kick off the show. And I always like to give a bit of sense as to maybe your role as a CEO and as a founder of a business and how that role has changed as you've scaled up and you've grown over the years. So it would be good to know from you, what do you think has fundamentally changed over since you started the business to where you are now as a founder and CEO?
Yeah, I mean, as most sort of founders do, I mean, you know, whether you're a sole founder or whether you're a team of more people, you know, you have the ability at the start, I think, to give yourself a title. And it's an odd one when you start with one person to call yourself CEO. It seems fairly self-inflated. You call yourself Prince of Unicorns for whatever reason. And I'm not precious over titles, but I think the key thing is from being as one, you're doing everything, to being a team. We're now 35 and growing fast. And that brings with it a huge amount of opportunity. Like, it's been very nice to pass on responsibility, but it brings with it challenges as well, in that you remove yourself from the kind of the coalface and circumstances in certain roles and teams. And it's been an interesting process, you know, going through that process of kind of handing over things to other people within the business. Some have been very glad to do with, and some of them haven't been able to do. For example, I'm not a coder. I can write some code, but I'm not an engineer and a technology architect. And so our CTO, George, came in and did that part of it, which is fantastic. But then there's things such as finance. It's not an area I'm particularly passionate about. Very important when you run a company and what you want to do, but it's just not my area sort of expertise. And then, you know, I think with any CEO, you will probably retain interest in certain areas of the business more so than others, depending on where your skills lie. But I think the key thing has been the role now is really about setting the direction, making sure the team are motivated to have what they need to achieve success in their role professionally and hopefully, you know, personally, where we can support as well. But it's, it does change a lot. And I think there's two sides to see, I guess, to being a CEO. And one side is leadership.
Yeah.
I think I can articulate where the business is going and where I'd like it to go and motivate people to get there. The other side of things is management. And, you know, hands up, I don't consider myself to be an exceptional manager. I've learned a lot over the period in running the business and made a lot of mistakes and learned, and I'm continually learning. But it's not an area that it's the area probably I get the most rewards, but is also the hardest and the one that's a sort of more of a roller coaster than other areas of the business.
And you mentioned, you know, as you're growing from sort of a one-man band to, you know, now 35, there was delegation and the part, you know, the baton and the responsibility to others. And how did you decide what you were good at, what you wanted to hand over and what you wanted to delegate so that you made certain that you stayed in, maybe to coin a phrase, your strength zone, and then, you know, others came in and also obviously could remain in their strength zone?
To knock off two at the start, I mean, there's two. One, things you can't do. So I can't build our platform.
Yeah.
I simply can't do that. So that's a very simple one. Finance side of things, I was happy to pass that on. I couldn't do that straight away. And as a growing business, you're always limited to a certain degree by money, cash in a bank, how much you can, the type of people you can onboard. And it was only 2019, I think, we brought on board a CFO, an experienced and she's elevated that function immeasurably. It's been fantastic. But then there's other areas that I've been more passionate about. One is about the experience, as in the customer experience. And that's not just down to the UX, you know, that's on the website, but it's down to how we interact, the language we use with customers. And also the marketing side of things, our messaging to people. And they're areas that I think I have more skills in than other areas. But you can't hold on to it and you can't retain it. A business isn't going to scale if you do that. Yeah. So some of those things are kind of harder to pass on. There's things such as compliance as well. We work in a regulated industry, and it's the FinTech podcast. That's a key part of what we do. Yeah. And I think what I've tried to do in most areas of the business is, and having worked in big business in the past, at Rolls-Royce, Sellafield and other places, is throw out all of the sort of corporate garbage, but retain the important stuff. And I do think having like clearly defined processes and ways of working, ways of communicating early on in the business have really served as well. We're not perfect, but you know, it's super important, I think, to do that so everyone's working in the same way.
And you mentioned, you know, your role split into leadership and management. Let's just sort of dive into the leadership part of it, because in one breath, we say we have to come up with a vision and we have to take our team along that vision. So are we only, when we have to take a team along that vision, are we only worried about, or are we only concerned about our team internally? Or should we really be thinking big stuff, you know, Elon Musk, you know, Bezos, you know, we're going to take society, or we're going to take an ecosystem, or we're going to take a group or a community along this. And as leaders, if we are going to do that, should we be really honing our skills on how to communicate to our audience in a way that they want to jump on a plane and go to Mars, right? Or go to the moon?
Well, yeah, I think you're right. There are two different things. Is where the company is going or what that means to your audience, your customers.
Yeah.
And those are two slightly different things, but I guess you get everyone along the same path towards where you're getting. And I do think having that bigger vision and communicating it is important. And I guess the question is always how soon you do that externally and how much you keep internal. We've got a vision. We've got kind of a shorter term vision or midterm. It's to protect the world's riders. That doesn't necessarily articulate. That's not necessarily a good external facing one because it doesn't necessarily appeal to customers to what it means to them. And I think we probably could do a better job of communicating that externally. And I think you're all right. There's leadership within a team and there's leadership within business, societal side of things. And I think it does take people to step up and be quite vocal about trying to tackle the issues that we're facing at the moment, society, environment, and so forth. But being realistic about what in our roles and in our businesses currently that we can do. The reason for starting a business was to enable me and our team to be able to, and the company to create some sort of influence, make a small dent in the world in some sort of way. And we, you know, we're choosing to do that through the medium of cycling, which is a phenomenal, it's one of the biggest tools we can have to, you know, transitioning towards a lower carbon-free society, reducing congestion, improving health, all that sort of stuff. So that is a really important part of who we are as a business. And, you know, the way in which you try and communicate that externally, and I do speak about, and a CEO ambassador for, is through the B Corp certification, which is, you know, it's a pretty rigorous process your company has to go through from all levels of the business through to the governing documents, the article of association, through to how you treat your customers, how you engage with, and how you treat your team and so forth. And I think there's certain ways in which we can do it, but I think the business community, the FinTech community needs more leaders that are more willing to talk around the bigger challenges we're facing rather than just the next big raise or fads in technology. And it's easy to get swept along by that. And as a founder, you do get swept up by that early on. And I'm slightly longer in the tooth than some founders now, but I've kind of been through that process. And the pressure when you first start around what's your exit strategy. And that's probably, in my mind, that's really not the thing you should be thinking about when you're starting a business. If you want to create a business that's going to be there for the future, for the long term.
Yeah, listen, I love that. And I think so many things to pick up on there. I'll start here. So Protect the World's Riders, fantastic banner. So I don't know if you know Josh Quigley. So Josh, he's doing the 7-day Guinness Book cycling record right now. Sort of a fan of him because the guy came out of nowhere and started cycling and went around the world and did a lot of different things. But on his journey around the world, I think it was last year, the year before, he was going through the States on, you know, maybe his final leg, and he got knocked out by a car on I think it was maybe like Route 66 or something like that. And, you know, looking at the pictures, there was absolutely a bit of a catastrophe for him. And, you know, people had to rally around him and sort and help him out, etc. So if you're wanting to protect and ensure the cycling community, we need to be communicating and getting in touch with the Joshes of this world and the guys that are really going out there and really doing, maybe not going around the world, but people that are, that do need your help at a point in time and can easily go, I need to follow, I need to get hold of David because he's going to help me out of the situation in Texas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the biggest, we have certain challenges we face as a business. And there's a couple of things you touched on there. One is kind of around almost the kind of ambassador role, influencer role that is important within a modern marketing mix. And the second side of things is actually people having that cover in place in the first place, because you need to have it there for it to be enacted.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the biggest challenges we face is, there's two, one of which is people don't know it exists. And it's becoming more visible now as it's becoming cycling is becoming bigger and insurance related to it is becoming more competitive, more well-known. But the other side of things is people assuming they're covered on through the home insurance or otherwise. And there's some of the challenges we face, but I completely agree. We need to get more people protected. And, you know, we choose to do that through, we've got partnerships with British Cycling and Cycle Scheme and bike brands and retailers. And we try to do that as much as possible. We do have a reasonable ambassador mix that we work with people who are active on the ground, but I couldn't agree more. You know, insurance is not exciting. It's not sexy, but it's very important. And you need to have something that's simple to buy, is there when you need it, and is, people aren't just looking to wriggle out of a claim. You know, we pay 98%. In 2020, we paid 98% of claims. Mm. That's phenomenal. Day in, day out, our CX team, our experience team, are putting people back on bikes, getting them in. And that's really what we're there to do. And that's, the core of the business, our business.
And although insurance isn't sexy, it's a must-have for everyone, right? I mean, we need to insure against a number of different things. But as you go through the process of communicating your message and also scaling up your business, how do you think, starting from a one-man band to now 35, what role is confidence played in order, I think, firstly, in you developing as a leader and you actually going, you know what, fuck, this is going to work. This is my passion and this is what I want to do. And sorry to say, it's all the VCs and angels and what have you out there, but you know, I'm not going to worry about the exit. I'm going to stick on the path to building a business that's sustainable, and I'm going to protect the world's world cyclists. So how have you developed your confidence as you've gone along the journey?
Yeah, I mean, confidence is it's an interesting one. And I think there's two types of confidence. Well, there's a number of different types of confidence, but I think anyone who starts a company has to have a certain amount of confidence, because you're really laying yourself bare at that point to say, I'm not following a standard path. I'm not following normal routes. I'm not going to work with other people. And I'm choosing to do something. And it doesn't matter if it's like a one-man band, if you're the trades, you're doing technology, you're going to something completely different. There's a myriad of things you could do. But you're really laying yourself bare as in, this is my idea. This is what I've chosen to do. And there will be millions of people who would want to say, why are you doing that? No, it's stupid. Regardless of you know, who you ask and how many your close family and friends will no doubt have confidence in you, but you will get those questions along the way, people who don't believe in what you're trying to achieve. And I think you have to have a certain amount of confidence and resilience, which is a very different thing, a certain amount of resilience to kind of overlook that and go for it. But it has to be smart confidence in my mind. And smart confidence, I mean, not blind confidence. I mean, confidence, the phrase con man comes from a confidence trickster, someone being tricked into giving money because the person is very confident in what they put across.
Yeah.
That's not the type of confidence we're looking at or for, nor is it the type of confidence we're looking for to say, not realizing when things just aren't working, or blatantly lying, being a Donald Trump of the world and just having that, just keeping the same rhetoric, regardless of all the evidence that shows whatever climate change is to the contrary. It's not having black confidence. You've really got to be smart and, I think, continually sort of check yourself. But I think to maintain confidence, you need to have a certain number of wins along the way. You need to have someone who says, actually, that's a good idea. Or a customer, I just shared a review this morning from a customer who was talking about the fact that it's really shit to have a bike nicked, but we were fair and we felt fairly and with trust. You know, when we dealt with the claim, we weren't trying to look for a way out of it. That's not what we do as a business. And those, even those little things, and I share them every single week because it's really important for the team to realize why we're here as a business, and the people, the CX team on the ground, that's why it happens. And then it might be, you know, if you do get some funding, that's a big tick that someone else or people who are experienced believe in your vision. That's a big confidence boost.
Yeah.
But again, don't let it go to your head. It doesn't mean the business is going to necessarily succeed. In a myriad of cases, even though you raise huge amounts of money, those businesses don't succeed. So I think it's just keeping yourself in check, but maintaining enough confidence to do your job well.
confidence in yourself and, you know, the wins, etc. I love that. And keeping yourself grounded. And as you're growing, you're getting these people into your organization, into your team, into your group. How do you give them, how do you jab them up and give them the confidence to go, listen, we're one, now we're 35. We're doing well, guys. Be confident in yourself. Obviously not cocky, obviously not, don't be a con man, et cetera, but be confident when we're presenting ourselves up, because that confidence is going to allow us to get those wins, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think one of the things we're probably guilty of as a company or leadership team is really recognizing the success that we've achieved. And we always have a big focus on that towards the end of the year when we look back. And it's crazy the amount of stuff that happens within a week, let alone a month or a year. You know, the developments we're sort of making and the new partnerships, number of customers we're onboarding is phenomenal. And I think it's hard to do that. But I guess as a leader, I generally, with my kind of direct reports, I'm really not a fan of micromanaging. I want to employ smart people who are ambitious, who could work independently and just support them along the journey, along the way. And I think you need to have relationships that are, and there's a number of brands for it, Radical Transparency, Radical, whatever the Ray Dalio one was, related to that. And I think you need to have a good relationship to say things aren't quite right, or things, if you think things could be done differently, but in a way that still supports them, motivates them, and recognize the wins. We, you know, we have a fairly flat bonus structure. We're not huge on just trying to reward just the sales team and targets and so forth, but we like to give little rewards, little wins along the way as well, just to give those little boosts. And as well, you know, the thing that I mentioned, even within Slack, just giving a nod to someone, your team for doing things, that could happen a few times a week. And I do encourage the team to do that for their team as well, because it helps.
You mentioned the team, you mentioned people, and the one common denominator in any business is people. And sometimes we forget about it because we also focus on the tech side of things, but you come back to reality, it's the people. We've got 35 people, or, you know, 45 or 55 people that are helping us, you know, scale up. And as business owners and as leaders, you need to have a philosophy on how to deal with people. A lot of time there's chat about culture, and I get it, I understand it, but it comes back to how do you as an individual and as a leader deal with people? If you don't know how to deal with people, well, you shouldn't be in business. Maybe that's a bit harsh, but also if you don't know how to deal with people, there's going to be more contraction, more arguments, more groups being out of sync, which you don't want. You want your groups to be in sync, right? So I'd like to know from you, what's your philosophy on dealing with people? It sounds like you have a great one, and I'd like to explore that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sounds like an odd thing to say. We try to treat people as humans, and it really is the case. People are not robots. They're not there to be hired and fired, switched on and off. That's not the point. But I think respect is probably the next one. Respect means not just that you have to say yes all the time. You might need to dismiss someone in a respectful way. And we have had to do that. I've had to do that before. And that's unfortunately, that's part of a role. There will be turnover.
Yep.
Not everyone necessarily performs it in the same way for a myriad of reasons. We had in the early stage of the business, we went through cycles where we had to shrink the team a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's just part and parcel. But you can treat them with respect at that point so they can you know, move on with their head held high and do that in the right sort of way. But culture is such a key part. It's the biggest risk, I think, for us as a business as we grow. And it's a large part of the reason that people join the company. I wrote something yesterday in relation to B Corp and the fact that we always ask people when they join the company as to why they joined. And quite a lot of the time is related to the language and the sort of team page and the employee page and how we treat people. And that isn't just a blind, that's not just something, by the way, that's being written on the webpage. We do an ENPS, so Employee Net Promoter Score survey every 6 months. I think the last one was, we increased for the last time, which is great. It was about 80, sort of, I think it's mid-80s, I'm pretty sure, which with the NPS goes from minus 100 to plus 100. So that's a phenomenally high score. But we always get feedback on that, you know, as to some things that aren't working, or there might be some line managers that don't have quite a good relationship with the team. And that's fine, but that we need to know that sort of stuff. So I think you need to be open enough to realize if things aren't quite right, not that you have to change things all the time. Everyone's got an opinion. Yeah. But I think as an overall, treating people with respect as humans, everyone's got needs, wants, values, but then continually measuring how you're doing is, I think, is a really important part.
I love what you're saying there. And to add one other element to that, which you alluded to, is communicate. Communicate, just, you know, consistently communicate, whether you're using tools, as you mentioned, NPS to check what's going on, or whether you're actually doing one-on-ones, but have the floodgates open and allow people to have a chat with you, have a founder's coffee or whatever it is. But get that communication lines up and running, and your team will love you for that, right?
100%. Yeah. I mean, is it something that over the years we've kind of refined and honed a bit more as to how we communicate? Communicate not just individually, you know, and I make sure each week I do have a check-in at some point with, you know, with the team members. Some are formal, some are less, more informal. Yeah. But also how you get together as a team. We have a monthly all-hands meeting that's useful. There's an open Q&A. Anyone can ask questions. And it just keeps people updated. So that's less of the sort of day-to-day what's happening stuff. It's a bit of a retrospective as to what we're doing. But it's having that balance around not having too much communication. Not everyone wants to be in meetings all the time, but having enough that people feel well communicated with and informed about what's happening at all levels of the business, because it can be quite easy. I'm very conscious of the fact that people who come into a more entry-level role need to be communicated to, I believe, as well as the rest, because that will keep them on board. It will keep them bought in as a company. And we found that has really worked from a retention perspective. So, yeah, communication, I agree. Slack is great, but it's not, you know, it's again, it's more robotic than human.
Yeah.
And I think especially the one thing we did turn up in COVID times was just picking up the phone to someone random who's not in your team. It could be anyone. And it provided actually some really interesting insights just to people's lives or how, you know, a different opinion on a particular topic. I thought it was a great way of communicating.
And just to flip the scales, because communicating internally, I mean, we mentioned at the top of the show, we also have to think about our external audience and prospects and customers. So good to keep that base and making certain everything flows and there's lots of communication internally, but we can't ignore the guys and the partners and everyone that is externally from us. And what do you do to make certain that those floodgates are always being used and always being developed and to make certain that people are engaged all the time?
Yeah, it's a good point. It's something we are just implementing a new CRM platform at the moment. It's something I think like super early on in the business. I wrote personally to each of our first, I think, 2,000 customers. And it was really interesting because we got some amazing feedback. And one guy was a polar explorer. And just some random things that sort of came off of it. So it was really good. And we lost a bit of that, you know, in full transparency over a bit of time. And that's something is a big focus for me to sort of pull back. And we've got this new platform that allows us to better segment customers and have a look. But it's not just customers, nor is it just team. It's the customers. It's our wider community. People might not be a customer, but followers because of the content that we put out. Yeah. And then we have got a huge partner network now. And that might be a retailer, a one-man band, and it might be a British Cycling in the world, you know. But we do try and keep them updated as to what we're doing and when, but also keep, you know, listen to what they're doing as well, making sure the communication is not two-way and make sure we're not just casting stuff out and not listening to what they're saying, whether it is a customer, whether it is a partner. I think that's an important part.
Yeah. And part of that outward communication also, I feel, if you're maximizing that, it's also going to help you with the bottom line, right? So some of the stuff that's going to come into your business. So whether it be revenue, whether it be new opportunities, or, you know, it might be a new employee that has seen some of the cool stuff that you are putting out. So what are you guys doing? You mentioned content, but what are you doing to sort of increase your inflow? So people reaching into you for not only your product, but also maybe as to become a part of the team or to be a partner.
I think it really, it does relate back to communication, like a huge amount. You know, we do outbound marketing and direct marketing, that sort of thing. So that's kind of an always on. I think it's the things over and above that, the sort of interesting things that you do or connections that we make. And we're part of various sort of networks, either within cycling or insurance, insurtech and so forth. So we've got a ear to the ground with what else is happening in this space. A lot of our inflow is organic. So we do outreach, absolutely, looking for companies we might want to partner with. And we've got a bigger partnerships team now. We're doing a fantastic job about reaching out to partners, because a lot of it was inbound to start with. And because you're dealing with so much inbound stuff, it's then hard to carve off enough time for the outbound. But if you don't do the outbound, then you might miss a few things sort of here and there. But yeah, it's got to be communication. And I think not just focusing on your current customer base, what you're currently doing, but and so much as joining local cycling clubs, cycling communities, going to events, meeting people. It's the broader mix, I think.
And how does that play out for you as a company when it comes to growing up and moving into the direction of achieving your mission, which is to protect sort of the world cyclists?
There's an interesting... Running an insurance business has been the longest gameplay sort of ever. It's not a business where you year one you make it. It's really based on retention. We have a very high retention rate, and over time that builds, and you grow your business builds, and that's how you hit that sort of exponential curve. Whereas, you know, my day to day, the things I do because I enjoy it, are really sort of instant gratification, you know, mountain biking, climbing, running, all that sort of stuff, being in the mountains, right? You're there and you're doing it now. And the running the business has been completely opposite. But it's been great in many ways because you see that grow over time. But interestingly, a lot of the growth or the new opportunities and new territories have come about from what we've already done within the UK. For example, there's a governing body in North America that's got in contact with us through another partner because they want us to do with them what we've done in the UK already. And I think for me, that comes down to how we treat partners, how we communicate with partners and our relationship with them. We don't treat partners as a commercial leech. We really try and support them and what they're trying to achieve and be very fair and transparent in our dealings with our commercials and so forth. And I think that really helps grow the business. And that stuff is then happening organically. You know, we're getting a lot of inbound because I think of how we act as a business.
Cool. And what are you guys doing right now as a leadership team? What factors are you looking at? What questions are you asking yourself as you start growing and you start moving forward over the next sort of 12 to 18 months?
Yeah, with I guess one thing on the horizon for us is to achieve our mission of protecting the world cyclists. And bearing in mind the cycling industry is growing and that, you know, there's competition in the marketplace and some well-funded companies, you know, the next funding round is kind of on our minds and it's what we've put in place by then. But it's also putting in place the tools and the processes we need to scale a lot faster. So if we wanted to do 10 countries in 12 months, you know, what team, what processes, what would we need to have in place to do that well in a way that doesn't slam our culture, that doesn't try and treat customers in a different way? How do we maintain the quality of what we've done to date at scale? And that's the key question for us right now.
Nice. Okay, cool. And as we look at wrapping up the show, I always like to ask this question to guys and girls on the show. How do you continuously self-educate? So what are you listening to on podcasts, maybe YouTube channels, maybe even books that you think the listeners would benefit from?
Yes, because I mean, I think as an overall, I really do like to read. I've done a little bit less of it than I would have liked to in the past 6 months. Kids and running a business, all the rest of it. But the day-to-day for me is kind of, I use Feedly, a myriad of different feeds from, in the main areas we're in, it's kind of cycling, sports, insurance, startup, investment sort of world. So you can choose what you look at and it can take 10 minutes to flick through. I have for reading sort of folders in my browser and also as a file if it gets sent anything. And I put a lot aside some time each week to read those. Nice. Two ones I'm reading at the moment, I guess it's Psychology of Money, which you might have seen. Nice. Quite an interesting. Nice. Yes, it's a very interesting one. There was one that was recommended by a guy who we did a little research partnership with, which people might know as well, which is The Lean Startup. And it's so my only part of the way into that. But I do like to read a lot. I generally don't find I get a huge amount out of every little one. But if you get a little snippet of information, that's useful. The big one for me, and I think it's been more transformative, is one by a guy called Steve Peters, who's the psychologist. It's British Cycling, which is called the Chimp Paradox. It's fairly well known now, actually. But there was two kind of principles. It talks around the chimp brain and the human brain. You can go into that. But the kind of two fundamentals that takeaways from that were, and the things that they drilled into the British cycling riders at the point that you get to the start line, is just having that confidence that you've done everything you can. But the two key things is that life isn't fair. Regardless of the fact that you go for it, you train, you do hard, you get the perfect things just don't go your way sometimes. That's just life. And the second one of which is the goalposts change. So almost kind of don't keep kicking in the same direction. You know, from year to year, you will need to change your focus because life evolves, the world evolves and so forth. And I think those could be looked at pessimistically. I think there's some fundamental truths about life. And I think if we keep those in mind, you know, whether it's personal or business life, I think they're quite important.
Yeah, and 100%, especially in this environment, right, as you're growing a business. And it's not even year on year. I think it's daily and weekly that you have to have your battle plan on a daily basis and really be going through stuff that's got to be actioned and move forward as you grow your business, because tomorrow is definitely a new day and you can't be dwelling on maybe the failures or successes from the previous day, right?
100%. No, I'm with you. Continually sort of evaluating what you're doing, not changing all the time. You don't want to give a lack of confidence to those people you're working with or leading, but absolutely keeping your mind open to new things.
Okay, brilliant. And listen, it's been an awesome show. And everyone that's listened this far, I think there's a lot of nuggets in here around confidence, around communication, around leadership that are worth listening to again because they're very actionable. And what we want to do with this show is we want to give you the insights that allow you to move your company and also your ecosystem, your society, etc., that you lead in to the next level and to their ideal scene. So listen to it. Drop me a note if you've got any questions. But listen, mate, it's been an absolutely fantastic show today. I really enjoyed having you. And how can anyone listening, how can they get in touch with you if they want to?
Yeah, sure. Probably LinkedIn is the best way, bearing in mind this is a business podcast. Just look for David George Bickmo. I think that's probably the easiest way. I'm on Instagram, less of a Twitter monster, but I think LinkedIn is probably the best way. And listen, thanks for having us. It's been great to talk.
Yeah, brilliant.